I'm sure Gil has talked about how this practice is both one of concentration and mindfulness. We build concentration till we become pretty stable, pretty centered, and then we open the mindfulness to whatever is present, whatever comes. So there are a couple paths that people often go down in this practice. One is the path of retreat. We have many opportunities for retreats in this area. In this Sangha, we have one-day retreats once a month. These are, they vary actually. 1 month is geared for experienced students. We sit from 8:30 to 5. There's basically no instruction. Gil gives a talk at the end of the day. That will be happening the 27th of this month. Then the next month, November 17th, will be a day geared for beginners. So if anybody's interested, that would be a good time to come. We sit from 9 to 4:30, and Gil does give instructions throughout the day. Pretty much just a little synopsis of what he's been doing for these 5 weeks. So every month, there's an opportunity for a day sitting. Then up at Spirit Rock Meditation Center, which is in Marin County, there are many retreats of varying lengths. There are 1 days, there are weekends, there are 3 day, 5 day, 7 day, 10 day, 2 week, 3 week, month, 2 month. So there's many opportunities to take advantage of. There's even on the East Coast a 3 month sitting. one of these days we'll have a 3 month at Spirit Rock on the West Coast. So these are opportunities to really deepen our practice. Even just a 1 day where we sit maybe, 8 hours or so. The mind and the body can become very still. It's hard in just one evening, 45 minutes or 40 minutes total or whatever. The mind still remains pretty busy by and large. But on an entire day, sometimes, not always, sometimes the mind can really settle. And we can experience great calm. Also, over time, great insights. As a couple of the questions earlier indicated, when we sit down to meditate, often things are much clearer. And things come to us that don't come in our busy everyday lives. So retreats can be I find them very nourishing. They're an opportunity to really go inward, to really focus on oneself. Generally, everything is provided. You don't have to worry about anything. You really can take the day or the weekend or the week just for yourself and allow whatever wants to be there to be there. This practice, I'm sure Gil has said over and over, is about self-acceptance. And it took me a long time to really get what that meant. But when I did, I found it was just incredible, transforming, really, to sit still and accept whatever happens, whatever comes up. It has a profound effect on us. We don't get that probably anywhere else in our lives. And it truly can be transformative. So retreats can be wonderful, wonderful ways to practice. Now, not everybody can afford either the time or the money to go on retreat. That doesn't have to be a problem. We can practice very well in our lives. In fact, I think that's the greatest value of this practice. You know, it doesn't have to be in any formal way, at any formal time. It is truly a practice of mindfulness, and we can be mindful whatever we're doing, anytime, all the time of the day. We talk about integrating this into our daily lives. I really think it's the other way around. We integrate our daily lives into our mindfulness practice. It might take some time for that shift to occur, but that's really ultimately what it's about. So one of the ways that we start to do that, sometimes it's reasonably easy to sit on the cushion or on a chair and with some practice become quite mindful, become quite aware of ourselves. And then we get up, and it's amazing how quickly it's gone. It can be like that. We get into a conversation, you know, we get in the car, start driving, turn on the radio, boom. That hour and a half of mindfulness that we just had is instantly gone. So learning to be mindful in movement or in whatever we're doing can be very, very important and can take some practice. One of the ways we do that is through walking meditation. And I think Gil has not mentioned walking meditation or taught it, right? No. He said he hadn't. If you do a retreat, whether it's a day or 3 months, the pattern is that we alternate sitting meditation with walking meditation. And that is a way for us to begin to bring our mindfulness into movement so that we're not just mindful sitting perfectly still, but in movement as well. And basically how that happens with walking meditation is that we walk generally quite slowly, and instead of focusing on the breath, we focus on the sensations in our feet and legs, the earth underneath our feet, the feel of our feet against the earth. We use a noting method when we're walking slowly of rising, which is when we're lifting the foot, moving as we move the foot, and then placing as we put it back on the earth. That's a way of keeping our attention on the walking, on the feet and the legs, as opposed to, you know, letting the mind wander or the breath when we're sitting. Walking meditation is also a way to give our legs a break. Most of us can't sit cross-legged or even on a chair for the whole day without breaking it up. So we do that to give our body a break. But it does not have to mean a break in mindfulness. We keep the mindfulness with it. We just move the attention from the breath to physical sensations. And there are varying instructions, varying ways of doing that. What I just mentioned is the very basic idea of walking meditation. Generally, we pick a space 20, 30 paces long, and we just go back and forth. The reason for that is not to have anywhere to go. There's no goal, no place to get to, just the back and forth. Or sometimes in a circle. Sometimes teachers will focus on the entire body, you know, feel the body moving through space. Generally, we're walking outside so we can feel the air, feel the sun, feel the coolness, whatever is going on, we can feel as we're walking through space. Sometimes teachers will say, don't pay attention to anything around you, just stay focused within yourself. Feel your feet and legs, the sensations in the muscles of your legs, and don't be distracted by anything else. That's one very narrow, limited focus. Other times, and the same teacher at other times, will say either at the end of the walking space, you know, you walk so many paces and then you stop before you turn around. Look around and take in whatever is there. Turn around slowly and then back. And again, pause and take in whatever is there. Often I find there are many distractions. Where we do our one-day sittings down here at St. Mark's Church, there's a park right next door, and there's often kids out playing soccer, playing baseball, whatever, and they're yelling, and there's dogs running. So my attention is pulled away a lot, which actually I find quite pleasant. So, you know, I just pay attention to whatever is going on there. Sometimes, then it's best, sometimes I will actually just stop and pay attention to whatever is going on, because it's very hard to walk, pay attention to my walking and pay attention to the game at the same time. Or there are very loud parrots, and they can be very distracting. We've come to love them, but again, sometimes I will pause and just listen to the parrot, because if I'm trying to walk, but my attention is really on the parrot, then what I find is often, you know, I kind of wobble or I stumble, or my attention is not focused on what I'm doing. And rather than having it pulled, better to stop, be with whatever, and then come back to the walking. In our daily life, anything and everything can be both a reminder to be mindfulness and something to be mindful of. A very well-known Vietnamese Zen teacher talks about using the telephone as a reminder to pause, wake up, and he suggests letting it ring three times and taking three breaths before you pick up the phone. So in that case, it is both a reminder and a way to be mindful. And he says, then when you pick up the phone, you know, you're going to be in a very different space than had you picked it up on the first ring. Traffic lights, again, are a great place to practice mindfulness. Very often as we're rushing about, it's an annoyance to be caught by a red light, right? And we can use that as a time to really rev up, get the adrenaline going, and get ourselves frustrated. It's a wonderful practice to remember, oh, I don't need to do that. Just breathe. Suddenly the red light is not a problem. It's a minute or three, whatever it is, to relax. Nothing you can do about it anyway. You aren't going anywhere. So you have a choice. You can get agitated or you can breathe and relax. In your home, going about your household activities, cooking, cleaning, whatever, you can do it mindfully. Which just means pay attention. Be aware as you're chopping the vegetables that you're chopping the vegetables. Usually we chop the vegetables and we're thinking about 15 other things or planning something or whatever. We can remind ourselves, just come back to the vegetables. It's a radical notion, really, because in this society of multitasking, it's considered very valuable to be able to do 3, 4, 5 things at the same time. But in this practice, we consider it very valuable to do one thing at a time and give it our complete attention. It's plenty of time for thinking, plenty of time for planning and all the other things. But maybe we don't give ourselves so much time to just be fully with what we're doing. Even the television can be a place to be mindful. A few years ago, someone was coming to my house to meditate, and it happened to be the night that Bob Dole was giving his acceptance speech, 5, 6 years ago? Right at the time that we were going to be sitting. And I wanted to hear the acceptance speech. So I said to this person, tonight we're going to meditate watching this acceptance speech. Well, he was horrified. He didn't want to hear it in the first place. But he didn't argue. He agreed to do it with some hesitation, but he agreed. And we just sat quietly, mindfully, and listened to the speech. We didn't talk, we didn't interact, we didn't look around, we just kept focused on Bob Dole. It could have been anything, but that happened to be what it was, and listened to the speech. And when it was over, this man was so impressed. He had never, it's not that he was impressed with Bob Dole per se, he was impressed with the difference by paying attention. He said any other time he would have been arguing with him, he would have been talking to his wife, he would have been doing all kinds of things. Never had it occurred to him to just sit still and listen, just fully take in whatever was being said. And then after that, then he was free to tell me how much he didn't want to do it when I suggested it and how awful he thought it was. But it turned out to be very, very useful. Listening and talking are great ways to be mindful, because most of the time we're not really listening and we're busy talking. And even if we're not talking, we're busy in our mind preparing what we're going to respond, what we're going to say. And we miss a good bit of what the other person is saying. So it can be a wonderful time to be mindful. Of course, you know, we're going to get caught in our old habits and start rehearsing. But when we catch it, then we can stop and just pay attention. And you know what? The other person gets it. The other person knows when you're really paying attention. There's a different quality, a different energy, and it's very respectful. It's very loving, actually, to give somebody that undivided attention. Then, when it's your turn to answer or your turn to speak, often much wiser things come out. And you find that a lot of the things that you were planning to say don't need to be said. You know, they were going to be argumentative, or they were going to get lost, or they were going to take you off on another track. They don't need to be said. And probably what's most important then gets said. Or at least the other person feels really heard, and that can change the whole dynamic of the conversation. Some other ways in my life that I have found to be mindful. I enjoy going to the symphony, and I used to go, and although I enjoyed the music, I was usually thinking, rehearsing or reviewing the day, or who knows, planning. This mind does a lot of planning. And I didn't get the full impact of the music. When I started really paying attention and bringing my mind back to the music every time it wandered, what a difference. What a difference I experienced. I really heard the music. I really appreciated each musician, and it made a tremendous difference. Same is true of a ballet or plays or whatever. Whatever you're doing, if you enjoy going to sports or whatever. When you give it your full attention, your undivided attention, what a difference. You really experience it. You really enjoy it in a whole different way. And most of the times you realize what you've been missing, how distracted you've been, and how you haven't really seen things. Just walking, you know, not walking meditation, but just walking. Again, the tendency so often is to be thinking. But when we bring ourselves back to just being with the walking or just being with our surroundings, especially walking alone, again, you see things, smell things, hear things that you never would otherwise. I have come to enjoy walking alone almost more than walking with somebody. Because if I'm with somebody, we're talking. And I don't see things. I don't stop to smell literally the roses along the way. It's a very different experience. It has its place, of course. But I have come to really love walking alone because then I take it all in. I'm a swimmer. And so swimming mindfully is far more enjoyable. And I have come to see that I actually get more exercise. I actually exercise better when I'm paying attention. If my mind is thinking or is drifting, I don't swim with the same energy. I swim slower. I don't swim as efficiently. I don't swim as strongly. And I know I don't get the same amount of exercise. When I pay attention, then I'm really with each stroke. And I've come to be able to feel not just whether the water is warm or cold. That's what it used to be. Now I can tell during the winter, I swim during the winter, I can tell usually within a half a degree what the temperature is. That's not a big thing. It's not important. But it's very nice to be that aware, to be that mindful. There are lots of other long-term students here. Maybe any of you want to add anything? Ways that you found of being mindful? Yes?
I do a lot of body work.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So just your being aware has changed it for the client as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Well, and receiving also.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have certainly found that. In fact, when I get a massage now, I don't let her play music. I just keep it silent. And both of us have our attention on whatever she's doing. It does make an incredible difference, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Being mindful or paying attention can be magical. It's really amazing. We think, you know, maybe we're paying attention most of the time. And then when we really start paying attention, wow, we find out how much we were not and how rich and alive things are when we do pay attention. probably Gil has mentioned in Buddhist practice, intention is such an important part. There's more emphasis put on intention than there is on what we actually do. So noticing our intention, you know, in speech is a good way to practice that. What is our intention to say something? Maybe we say less when we start paying attention to what the intention is. Paying attention to what is our intention coming to practice, coming to meditate. You know, what brings you here on Thursday nights? What brought you here in the first place? What keeps you coming? What is your intention? And often what comes is sort of the superficial or the immediate intention. Then if you stay with it, you begin to see a deeper and deeper and deeper level of intention. What is the heart's true intention? What do we bring to this practice? What is its meaning in our lives? Anybody have questions? Comments? Yes.
Why is it that our presence is so easy to be mindful when you're swimming and so difficult to be mindful when you're speaking? Is there some reason that, or is that true for everybody? Or I mean, I'm just totally mindful, like you said, that sight, sounds, I mean, you hear people's watches in the water, you can see the light in different directions and the bubbles come. I mean, there's so much.
Mm-hmm.
So rich.
Mm-hmm.
And then speech, I'm just, you know, I'm confused. And why?
My first answer was going to be, it's easier to be mindful swimming because we're not talking. Talking is very distracting. It's true. It's true.
What are some things to be mindful of?
Well, setting the intention is a big one. You know, setting the intention to be mindful. And then, as with everything, noticing when we're not. Catching ourselves when we're not. It's like anything else. You set the intention to be mindful, and then you get into a conversation, and 15 minutes later you think, oh, that's right, I was going to be mindful. But then, so you just reset the intention. And what tends to happen over time is that the next time it's after 10 minutes, and the next time it's after 5 minutes, and then, you know, it keeps backing up until you have a little more mindfulness at the time that you're speaking. But it is definitely a practice. And I think bringing the mindfulness to listening is a good way to actually practice mindfulness of speaking, because it does slow us down and keeps us quiet. But it is a practice. And often teachers will say mindfulness of speech is the hardest thing to be mindful of. I don't know, it's so automatic, it's so... Speech follows thought, maybe, and our minds are so busy thinking. Yeah, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just mentioned about a year ago, Gil gave a whole half day on mindfulness and speech.
Yes.
And we didn't figure it out. So. Listening was the first part. Yeah.
Any other thoughts or ideas about bringing mindfulness into daily life?
Uh-huh. Well, I think, I guess just that every once in a while, like the same thing you were saying, like if sitting in a stoplight or this or that, or other situations where, you know, where the first response is just to be irritated, and, you know, and then that just, like you say, I've had the same experience. Gives you a chance to instead, you can remind yourself to try to adopt a different attitude of just being aware of the moment and not just being all caught up in frustration and irritation. So different things that comes up for me, sometimes in the work that I do, it was so boring that at times it gives me a real good chance to try out sort of
relax. Mm-hmm. Yes, then you can really explore boring.
Yes, right.
It's amazing what you might find.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just go. Mm-hmm. And then I go, well, I get it to the other side of boredom, which is like just, then I can sort of enjoy the moment of kind of enjoying it. And then
yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it is just a little clarification. It is the mindfulness, the awareness that changes the attitude.
Yeah, right.
We don't have to change it.
That's right. Yeah.
We don't have to, you know, berate ourselves for being agitated or anything else. Try to be loving or whatever. Just the awareness, just noticing. Oh. And instead of getting revved up, breathe. The attitude automatically follows. Yes?
I find it helpful in just waiting, not just to stop, like, for example, but just in waiting, like if I'm waiting in line or any time that I have to wait for something, and I find this general sense of annoyance arise, and which is like a message to me that it's time to breathe.
Great.
And waiting becomes a pleasant experience. And just yesterday I was waiting in line at a restaurant for a fast food place, and I noticed that I was getting a little impatient, so I was breathing and feeling very relaxed. And when I got to the front of the line, she said, "Please accept my apology for having to wait." And
wow.
I felt like saying, I don't mind, I enjoy waiting. But I didn't say it because I knew it would have sounded sarcastic.
That's great. And that's wonderful that you said annoyance and impatience can be reminders to breathe or to be aware. Yeah. Bud, you were going to say?
Mindfulness of food. Mindfulness of eating.
Yes.
That's a big one. Just being around Whole Foods and all the selection, the Whole Foods market in Palo Alto and all the selection that's there. Just to walk into the center of that and be mindful of how you're pulled to this, pulled to that, slowly make a selection order more quickly. And scooping the food in and how much you take and what you take, and then being anxious to eat it but having to stand in line, and then finally getting out there and opening the package and trying to do it mindfully. It's a pretty fertile field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For lots of things, right? Yeah.
I've been finding that every time that there's an aggravation that happens, no matter what it is in my life or something that upsets what I think is my balance, it's that I see it as an opportunity right away to learn something. And just being open to that.
Being open. Yeah. Lovely.
Mm-hmm. I find it real helpful just to put space between different tasks as opposed to doing one and then jumping to another. For me, it just makes my relationship with what I'm doing is so much better when I take a breath between events, and that's been a big thing for me lately, is just to not really resist the temptation of sort of getting ready for the next one. And I find I have a lot more energy when I don't do that. And it seems like I get more done, which is surprising.
It's an energy drain, isn't it, to constantly be living in the future, planning for the next thing.
Sort of agonizing.
Right. Has Gil talked about the difference in being in our experience and the commentary of our experience? Probably he has. So much of our lives, we live in the commentary of our experience. Say a rose, you know, I'm out walking and I see this beautiful rose. The tendency is to start thinking, oh, what a beautiful rose. Oh, I've never seen such a big one. Oh, I wonder what kind it is. Gee, you know, I can't grow them that big or that whatever. I'd love to pick that and take it home. You know, on and on and on. And what we can do is drop all that and just see the rose. Smell it or just be with it. And then, as you were saying with the swimming, how rich it is, wow, we really experience that rose. And I have found in my practice, the desire to pick flowers has dropped away. I have no need. I mean, I do have bouquets in my house, but I have no need to pick flowers. I love just seeing them right where they are. the pure or the raw experience, the raw beauty of that rose, without any comparison or any thought or anything else going on. It's a freeing, it's a simplifying, you know, to just experience things as they are and not have to have that constant commentary. It's a relief. And as you said, it gives us energy because so much energy is caught up in all that thinking and commentary.
Mm-hmm. I find that I actually am really mindful in the moment. I notice that a lot of when I'm spending time with friends or, you know, we're doing something and they'll be like, oh, it's so much fun. Are you having fun? Mm-hmm. And I don't really do that. I don't really experience and I don't attach anything to my experience. I just let it happen. Mm-hmm. But I then later look back on the memories and then I go, wow, I had a really good time. I had so much fun. So I don't know if that's, you know, that's not really being mindful either. But when do you get to experience the fun? In the moment, I'm not saying, oh, I'm having such a great time. It's after the event or the experience, I'll look back and I'll start feeling the emotions of the experience.
So you were having fun, but you weren't aware you were having fun.
No, I'm just being. Like, I'm just in a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Being in it and then experiencing it. And then after is when I attach that was fun, that was miserable, you know, emotions to it.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little lag. You have the experience.
Like maybe the next day or the next week, I'll look back on it.
Mm-hmm. When you were first talking, I didn't hear any problem. You know, you said you were mindful at the time. Great. You know, nothing wrong with a memory as long as we're not clutching. I'm not certain now. Maybe if what you're saying is there's a little lag, you are enjoying yourself, but there's no awareness. You're just in it. You're just doing it, right?
Yeah.
If that's the case, then you can begin to bring the mindfulness as we were talking about before, a little bit closer, a little bit closer, a little bit closer. So, it takes practice, you know, to bring our attention to every moment. So just whenever you realize that your attention wasn't there, that you were doing it, but there was no awareness, that's a moment of waking up. And it can be, you know, a few minutes, a few hours, a day later. But if you make a habit, a practice of doing that, then the attention will come closer and closer until you are paying attention at the actual moment. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
One of the things I've noticed since meditating is if I'm faced with a situation where I won't have anything to do, which used to make me very anxious,
uh-huh.
The idea of unfilled time, now is something I actually look forward to. I mean, I feel good about it. I mean, it could be waiting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a situation where you really can't do anything. You didn't bring anything with you to do anyway. So you just kind of sit there, stand there, whatever, and just be.
It can be okay not to be doing something.
Yeah, it's not anxiety producing.
Right. Anymore. Wonderful. Yeah. Yes, that's one of the benefits of this practice. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Question. I'm one of those people that are really wonderful at multitasking, and when you were talking about mindfulness, about really focusing on one task, one of the things I'm curious about is, does this practice help in memory? Because, you know, in multitasking, you're doing two, three things at one time, and I struggle a lot with the memory of the things that I have
It certainly can. Mm-hmm. Your mind isn't so cluttered, isn't so full of things. things are clearer, and that just makes it easier to remember. I think it happens in varying degrees to different people, but they have done studies, some research, and found that, yes, long-term meditators can improve memory.
I wanted to go back to the rose thing. And as far as the, what did you refer to? Not the commentary, the running commentary. I always remember something that James Joyce said, the naming is the numbing. And one of the first times I experienced a real rawness about 30 years ago, that just was looking at a blue jay, and I just sort of dropped the name. It was an extremely, I mean, very existential, overwhelming experience. And because we're living in, we live the myth of science now, and everything needs to be identified, cataloged, categorized, and if you're with another person, you may be competing for that identification and so forth. And it, I think it's probably very, very frightening. It would be very, very frightening for people generally in Western culture to drop the naming and have the experience because it is raw, you know, the raw encounter. I mean, that is probably what Western culture has done. It's overlaying with distancing from direct experience.
And you make a very good point that it can be very frightening to let go of the naming in this case, to let go of old habits. You know, we all think we want freedom, but when it comes right down to it, it can be pretty scary. So one of the nice things I find in this practice is that it's kind of self-regulating. It happens gradually, slowly. And when the fear comes up, you know, for the most part, I can notice it. I can be with it. It does come up, for sure. For sure. But often things are happening outside of my awareness. Changes, you know, are happening outside of my awareness. And it does happen gradually, so that in general there's an adjusting as it happens. But certainly I have experienced that fear. And it's, as you say, such a tremendous difference, isn't it, between naming it and dropping that and just being with the blue jay or the rose.
It's an extraordinary experience and equitable, because an equitable relationship where the animal or the bird, the lizard, whatever it is also seeming to be right there and staying right there.
Yes, many people speak of it as no difference. Mm-hmm. You know, the jay and I become one, or the flower and I become one. Yes.
That's sort of like one of the central themes of the whole medical practice. And you work with attention and you work with intention. They're doing a couple studies on it with hospitals and things.
Interesting.
Yeah, just based on that.
So you deal maybe with things going on in the body, but without this label of whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is that...
A
little bit like we talk about with the pain. You know, instead of feeling pain, which can feel so solid and so enormous, so overwhelming, we begin to see, oh, there's drawing, there's pressure, there's heat, there's cold, there's tingling. And suddenly it isn't such a solid mass of pain anymore. It's all these sensations. Yeah, and they may be not so painful. Great. Yes?
I've seen a lot of the methods that folks have been talking about, but for me, the real litmus test that I think is what other people see in comments, you know, unsolicited in myself. And the one thing that people have seen in the short time I've been meditating is that I'm able to handle high stress crisis type situations where other folks are like freaking out, you know, much better. And I think it's because of the meditation.
Yeah, any other pressing questions? Okay, we just have 5 minutes. I'd like for us to sit a little bit, but I was just going to remind you that this sitting does happen every week. It's been a little different for these 5 weeks because it's been the introductory course, but there is a sitting here every Thursday night from 7 to 8:30, and the format is just a little different. We sit from 7 to 7:30, right? And then Gil talks from 7:30 to 8:15, and then sit the last 15 minutes. Gil said to tell you that he will be back next week. I have no idea what his topic is, but I invite you all to continue coming. It's really good to sit regularly. And many of us find it's very helpful to sit with a group. Some people prefer sitting alone, but I think most of us find there's a synergy. There's just a difference sitting alone. Whoever it was talking about the cat earlier. You know, when we sit here together, there's no cat usually. There's no distractions, and there is the energy of the entire room. And I find I've been sitting for, I think, 15, 16 years, and it is always easier sitting in a group than it is at home. At home, I'm more restless. The mind is busier. It's not quite the same. So I encourage you to come as regularly as you can. There's also a sitting on Monday night you probably know about. It's a much larger group, and it's from 7:30 to 9:00, but you're welcome to come to that. And right, the sitting is 45 minutes instead of a half hour. And I don't know if you know if anything's been said that we will be moving from here probably around the first of the year to a new location in Redwood City. There are newsletters I noticed out on the table. If you haven't gotten one, please help yourself to that. That lists all the events that this Sangha has. It's gotten to be quite large, and there are many events, so avail yourselves of that. And let's do sit for just 5 minutes before we end.